Hi everyone, thanks for coming, and thank you to Bina for having us. So this week we're going to do Perek Chaf Gimel, which is a very, very, it's the most famous Perek of Tehillim for non-Jews, like worldwide. Like if you were to look a search on the web, over 2.5 million hits would come up for Perek Chaf Gimel, and if you were to look for any other Perek, you'd get less than a quarter of that. So Perek Chaf Gimel is really well known. And there was a Rabbi Weinreb from OU in America, and he was saying that his mother was sent, she lived in a place where there was no Jewish school, so she was sent to a Christian school, and she was supplemented with her Jewish studies at home with tutors. And she was just told, like, when you're in your Christian school, don't do their prayers. Like, just follow along with the school, but don't pray. And every morning they stood up and they said their prayers in English, and she didn't know what they were, and she refused to say them. And later on she realized that what they were saying was Perek Chaf Gimel in English. And she really could have said Perek Chaf Gimel because it's Tehillim, and she could have started her day with a Perek of Tehillim, but she didn't know then. And it just shows like how famous Perek Chaf Gimel is, that it's really been taken on by every religion and anyone who wants to say Tehillim, like who feel connected to God. It's one of those prakim that you'll see quoted a lot. And last week we were saying how there are different types of songs of Tehillim. So there's Tehillim like talking about Torah, talking about Eretz Yisrael, talking about giving advice, talking about crying out in times of need, thanking Hashem. So this one is a Mizmar B'tachon. It's where David really shows his faith in Hashem and gives us a huge lesson on how we can have faith during hard times, during good times as well. So let's go around and we'll read through the Perek of Tehillim just so that we can know what we're talking about. So do you want to start, Racheli? You can do Hebrew or English, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Mizmor l'David Hashem ra'i lo yachzar, a psalm of David, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not lack.
Maybe we'll do the English also, yes. Like if you read Hebrew.
Actually, it's in English. Got a bit of sound. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters.
And he restores my soul. He guides me in straight paths for his name's sake. Gam ki elef begeit samatah, at lo irara ra, ata amdi shevtacha umitz antecha hime in chameini. For though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me.
Tarach b'fanai shalcha neged zarurai, dishan ta b'shem en roshi kosi revaya. You prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. You have anointed my head with oil, my cup overflows.
Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of Hashem.
Thank you. Amazing. So we see that Nechama Leibowitz tells us that we see that David starts with a huge amount of very strong bitachon, and we can see it in what's said, that the Lord is my shepherd and I will not lack, and he restores my soul and he guides me, and you are with me, you prepare a table for me, you protect me from my enemies, and surely I'll have goodness all the days of my life. That David really feels that Hashem is with him no matter what. And this Perek of Tehillim was written when David was running away from Shaul, who was the king before him. So just a bit of background. The first king of Bnei Israel was Shaul HaMelech, and he was king for 2 years, and David HaMelech was meant to take over after him. So Shaul had sinned, and he wasn't worthy of his sons receiving the kingship. And so David, who was going to take over, lived in the palace because he was one of Shaul's workers. He was part of the palace like life. And slowly Shaul became more and more suspicious of him, and he became more and more paranoid, and he started to lose his mind in a way that there were times when he wanted to kill David and of course, like, and then there were times when he realized that he came, like, back into himself, and he obviously didn't want to kill David, who was going to be Hashem's next king, but there were really times, like a mental illness almost, where he had, like, schizophrenia and really tried to kill David. And so there were times where David literally had to flee the palace and run away for his, and run for his life. And there were times where Shaul nearly did kill him, like threw spears at him, and Hashem saved David, and like, and then other times more naturally where he ran away and got himself out of a dangerous situation. So this is one of those times where David was running away, and it's a real fear for your life when the king is pursuing you. It's not just some random person. He's got a whole army. He's got resources to help him pursue. And so the fact that David could write this Mizmor B'Tachon with so much faith during a time like this shows us that David was kind of in the lowest of his low, and he was still able to show so much faith in Hashem. So a lot of this Tehillim is a mashal, referring to Hashem as a shepherd and David as a sheep. And a mashal is, he uses this as something, because it's something that people can relate to. People can understand the metaphor of a shepherd and a sheep. Because if you think about it, a sheep really, he doesn't have any choice in where to go. Like a sheep is completely directed and guided by the shepherd. And the sheep trusts. It's never worried when it's going to get its next graze from, when it's going to get its next drink from. He trusts that his shepherd is going to guide him to the right field and guide him to a source of water and guide him at night back to a place of shelter. And so that's exactly what David was saying, that he trusts Hashem, that Hashem is going to give him food. Hashem is going to protect him just like a shepherd protects his flock. And we also see this mashal, this analogy in with the story of Yosef, that Yosef is also referred to as ra'eh, as a shepherd, because he was the one who sustained all of Mitzrayim. During the time of the famine, it was he who came up with the idea to save the food. It was he who rationed out the food, and he was the one who was the shepherd who protected Mitzrayim throughout the whole ordeal. So when David was running away from Shaul, he ran and he was going wherever, just in a panic, wherever he was going to, and he found himself in Yad Charas, which is a dry, parched land, that he came to a land with no food and no water, and he really didn't know where his next meal was going to come from. And so we see in Pasuk Beis, Binat Desha, he makes me lie down in green pastures, that Hashem soaked the area with moisture, it was a miracle, and things grew, and it became like Gan Eden for him. And so this Desha is referring to a place of miraculous growth, that it miraculously became grass and became moist and able to eat from, and became something that David could now use. And David could also be referring to Be'er Miriam with the man in the desert, that when Bnei Israel were leaving Mitzrayim and we came to the desert, and there was no food and no water and there was no way to survive. But then Hashem made a miracle, and Hashem gave us water through the well of Miriam, through Be'er Miriam, and he also gave us man, which was our sustenance in the desert. And it says that everywhere Bnei Israel went, how Be'er Miriam worked was that it was a well in the middle, and then it overflowed, and each shevet would dig out tunnels, well, not tunnels, like trenches to their shevet where they were, and they got the water. And so because the water was in the ground, it basically created an oasis wherever Bnei Israel were. So nowadays, if you wanted to track where Bnei Israel were, you could like put up a drone and see where there was like greenery happening, and then you could like connect the dots and see where Bnei Israel traveled. And so it really was a miracle. Everywhere Bnei Israel went, we suddenly created this oasis in the desert. And again, it shows us that we lack nothing, and that Hashem gives us everything we need, and Hashem guides us. And Rav Eli Mansur says that this parak is a skula for Parnassa, because Parnassa is Hashem's way of giving us our resources to show us that we never lack. and so there are 57 words in this parak of Tehillim, and 57 is the gematria of Zan, which means sustenance. And there's also 227 letters in this mizmar, and that refers to bracha. It's the same gematria as bracha. And so like we see that we get bracha for our sustenance from this parak of Tehillim. And the Aruch Chaim even says that people should say when you wash for bread, then you say this mizmar of Tehillim and then say hamatzi, We don't do it nowadays because we don't have a hefsek, like a break between the two brachot, but it is a thing to say this perek of Tehillim when you want sustenance or when we're eating bread and it's a meal of receiving sustenance. So if we look at the end of Pasuk Aleph, it says, Lo echsar, I will not lack. So it's David saying that he doesn't have to worry about his next meal and he relies on Hashem. And it, like we said with the analogy of the sheep and the shepherd, it's following blindly. And then in the next pasuk, it tells us how he follows blindly, that he's going to get his basic needs, his food and his water. And then in pasuk Dalet, it goes on and it tells us even more, how is he going to be guided by Hashem? That even when he's going to be in a scary place, walking in the valley of death and having enemies, that he still trusts that he doesn't fear that anything bad will happen because Hashem is his shepherd, and so he doesn't have to fear anything. So we also know when it says lo echsar, like not lacking, that all our merit, for all our reward for our mitzvahs comes in the world to come. But then we see people who are rewarded in this world and who have good things. And so a lot of time when a sinner we see sinners who have good things and who have reward, it's really Hashem's way of giving the sinner their reward. Every person does good. You can't be bad in every single way. And so what Hashem does is he gives a sinner a reward in this world so that he doesn't owe him anything in the world to come. And he doesn't have to give him that much greater reward of Olam Haba. And so what we do in this Perek of Tehillim is we're thanking Hashem for giving us so much and for giving us such good lives and giving us food without worry and giving us homes without worry. But Lo Echsar, he's not taking away from our Gan Eden either. That even though Hashem gives us such goodness in this world, it's not at the expense of our reward for our mitzvahs in Gan Eden.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, please.
Like, what do you think Hashem, who is Hashem referring to, like, with this as a sinner?
Okay, so there's different, like it's referred to differently in different ways. Like the most basic is someone whose sins are more than their good deeds. But then we live in a time that's very, like a lot of us have that, unfortunately. But also in general, like our good deeds, we don't think about them. We just are intrinsically good people also. Then there's more intimate, that there's three levels. There's like a sinner who has only bad deeds, and then a Beinoni who has mixture of good and bad deeds, and then a Tzaddik who has only good deeds. So I'm not sure what it would be referring to in this particular case, but I think it would be someone who does only bad, like who really is a negative person and doesn't deserve Olam Haba. Like people who in general try to be good people and who try to follow Hashem, then they're not considered Rasha'im. Like you're doing your best and everyone has different circumstances and different levels that they're supposed to reach. And so it wouldn't be that you're a Rasha if you're put in a situation where, let's say, you're never given the opportunity to know that you're a Jew even. So if you're never given the opportunity to do mitzvahs, how can you be called a Rasha if you didn't know? Do you know what I mean? So it would be really someone who doesn't deserve Olam Haba. Like really bad people, Hitler, let's say, like that kind of thing. Anyone have anything to add? Or okay. So then the Malbim tells us that David was a shepherd when he was younger. So the reason he uses this mashal a lot is because it's something that he can relate to. And he's basically reminiscing of his past life. That when he was a shepherd, he was really in his element. He could go out into the field all day and just connect with Hashem. And he could, all he had to do was make sure that his sheep were safe. But the rest of his day was free to connect Hashem, to learn Torah, to write Tehillim, to do whatever he wanted. Whereas now, when he was going to become the king of Bnei Israel, he was going to have responsibilities and he wasn't going to be able to sit and learn all day. And he wasn't going to be able to sit and look after his ruchnius need, like spiritual needs all day. He was going to have to go out to war. He was going to have to go and fight against enemies and make sure that his people had enough food and make sure that a lot of the technical military stuff were taken care of, rather than what he really wanted to do, which was sit and learn Torah all day. And so what he said, this Tehillim is kind of a realization that Hashem has a different plan for me. That although I wanted to stay as a shepherd all day and I really had no problem with just sitting and meditating and being with my sheep, Hashem had a different plan, and David was saying he lets go and he's going to go with Hashem's plan. That our plans aren't always Hashem's plan and we should go along with it. And Rav Chaim of Volozhin has a really nice idea about this, and he says that, relating to Pasuk Bet, that sometimes people really want to move to a new place. They want to move to a new job, move to a new country, a new city, change their stage in life, and Hashem doesn't let them. And so you work as hard as you can to get there, but sometimes Hashem says, "Binat Deshe, stay in this, lie down in this grass, lie down, stay here." And Deshe, it's going to be good, it's going to be lush, it's going to be beautiful. That although you desperately want this change and you want something to be different, Hashem says, "No, right now you have to stay in this place and you have to stay at this point in your life, and it's going to be good. Like, this is my plan. Bless you. This is my plan as Hashem, and it's going to be good for you." Hashem knows what he's doing, and we should go according to Hashem's schedule and not our own schedule. And then we also have the opposite. That
who says that? Sorry,
Reb Chaim of Elazhin. And then we also have the opposite, where there are times where we're very happy with our jobs and we're very happy with where we live, and sometimes we get fired or the lease on our house ends and we have to move out, and they want the house back and you have to move, or things happen that you're very content with where you are, and Hashem says, "No, I want you to move." And again, we have to have faith that Yarbitzeni al Meimenucha, that He leads me besides the still waters. That yes, I'm moving and yes, I'm going, but Hashem's going to direct me to a good place. And so we have to have faith that Hashem is always doing what's best for us. So even if it's not what we planned and it's not what we wanted, if we go by Hashem's plan and what Hashem wants, and we can have that bitachon, that faith that Hashem is doing it for our best, then we'll be able to have that emunah in Hashem. So Pasuk Gimel starts with Nafshi Yishavev, he restores my soul. So what's David referring to? That when David became king, his life suddenly changed. He went from being this poor shepherd who lived very simply, had a very simple life, to now becoming the king with a lot of wealth and a lot of power and a lot of diplomatic relations and policies and things that he had to deal with. And we know that says in Pirkei Avot that harbe yechasim, harbe da'aga, that the more possessions you have, the more worry you have and the more anxiety you have. And we really see that someone who has a lot of wealth, they spend a lot of time trying to protect that wealth. Or someone who has a lot of things spends a lot of time trying to make sure that their things are organized. And so what David was saying that, and we also know, unfortunately, that a lot of time that wealth and power corrupts people, that the more wealth and power you have, the more corrupted you become. And so Hashem, like David was thanking Hashem, that even though his circumstances changed and even though he became wealthy and powerful, he was thanking Hashem for protecting him, that he didn't lose his mind and lose himself to the wealth and power, but he was able to stay true to himself. And how did he manage to do that? He managed to do that through studying Torah. That Torah is really our guide and our medicine to preserving our mind, to remembering what's important and to remembering what's emes and what's truth. It's studying Torah. And so he was saying, like, Hashem restores my soul and he keeps me on the straight path. And he was thanking Hashem for giving him that strength to stay on the straight path. In Pasuk Dalet, he says, Gam ki yelech begeit samavet, that though I walk through the valley of death, la irara, I will fear no evil. And he was saying that if you fear Hashem and you have only fear in Hashem and you use 100% of your fear for that, then you don't have any room for fear of anything else. And so he was saying that we should fear Hashem. Like, you should have a fear, but 100% of that fear should be for Hashem, and then you won't have fear of anybody or anything else. And that's what he was saying, that he could be walking through the valley of death. He could be, which is symbolic of suffering and hardship, and he could be going through the hardest things, but yet he won't fear it and he won't be upset about it because he only has fear in Hashem. And if we look, he says two words which seem very similar, and so obviously they have to have different meanings. He says, Shiftecha u'mishantecha, your rod and your staff. So if we really, it's referring to one, this is like the rod and the staff of a shepherd, but it's really referring to one stick. The shepherd only carries with him one stick. He doesn't have a rod and a staff, it's one thing, but it has two purposes. A shiftecha is a stick which he uses to hit the animals with. So when he needs the sheep to move along, he'll move them along with his stick. And then also, mishantecha, when they're just relaxing and resting and his sheep are staying in one spot, then he'll use this staff to rest on. So it's one staff, but with two purposes. And both of them have a consoling message to us from Hashem, that we realize that challenges are from Hashem and only He can help us. So how is a shevet, which is used to hit the animals, how is that comforting to us? How does that show us that Hashem is with us? That the Gemara tells us that we should worry if we don't have Isurin for 30 days, if we don't have hardships for 30 days, that it's part of life that we should have a bit of hardship and we should feel that Hashem is testing us and that we need to overcome our tests and show our emunah in Hashem. And so that's like the shiftacha. That's like Hashem hitting us in a way. And it's comforting to know that Hashem is hitting us because it's comforting to know that Hashem hasn't forgotten us and that Hashem wants us to improve on ourselves and wants us to work on ourselves. And so He gives us these hardships, which Hashem only gives us hardships that we can manage and we can handle. And through that, we're able to grow. So I'll just say a really nice quick story about that. That there was once a city which had two men of the same name and they were both merchants. And one day a message came back and they both sent out ships one day with all their merchants and they were going and the ships left. And a few months later a message came back to one of the men and said, "I'm sorry, your ship sank and you lost everything in that ship." And the man just fainted from the news. It was the most terrible news and he fainted. And so they put water on him and they revived him. And as soon as he remembered what had happened, he fainted again. And this happened a few times. And so they went to the Rav of the city and they said to him, What do we do? This man's going to die. Like every time we try and revive him and he remembers what happens, he keeps fainting. And the rabbi said, the next time you wake him up, tell him not to worry. It was a mistake. It was the other man's ship. And so they did that. They revived him. They told him it wasn't him, not to worry. And he was okay and he was relieved. And they got another message saying, "Sorry, we made a mistake. It was the other man's ship." And so they went back to the rabbi and they said, "How did you know?" And he said, "Because a man is only given challenges that he can handle. And if this man was getting a message that he had a challenge and he couldn't handle it, then it obviously wasn't his challenge. And it must have been the other person's challenge." And so Hashem really only gives us challenges that help us grow. And they're not too hard for us and they're not going to break us, but they're really to make us grow. And so, one second, I want to see. Okay, we're going to get back to this point later, but it refers to something later. So just remember this and keep it in mind. And there's also Isurin Shel Ahava, that it's extra affliction shows that we're dear to Hashem. And we know that from disciplining our children, or that if you care about someone, you want them to be good, and so you keep them in line a bit more, and you direct them on a path that is straighter. And so it's like Hashem gives us Isurin, gives us hardships to try and keep us on a straighter path, which is showing that Hashem is caring about us. He's a loving parent, and parents have that job of disciplining their children. The Ben Ish Chai also says about this that comfort is a mindset, that if you say gam ze letova, this too is for the good, then you can think positive and it will be good. So you can have coffee, which is bitter, and we add sugar to it to make it sweet. Or you have lemon and you turn it into lemonade, that you make it into something sweet. And so when Hashem brings shevet, when Hashem brings a stick and something hard, like a hardship for us, then we have to bring the mishan. We have to bring that staff, that comforting thought, because we have to try and turn the situation around into something good, because by remembering that Hashem always takes care of us and if we don't doubt Hashem, then we'll be able to see the good in a situation and we'll be able to try and make a situation good. So if we look at Pasuk Hey, it says, Tarach lefanai shulchan, that Hashem prepares a table for me. And in the Midbar, this was like, if it's referring to Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar, then it's a question that that enemies are asked of Hashem. Sorry, when we left Mitzrayim, Egypt, and we went into the desert, a lot of the enemies kind of laughed at Hashem and said, "Very good, you released your people from being slaves, but look where you brought them, into a desert. How are they going to get food? How are they going to live? You basically brought them there to die." And so it's saying that Hashem, Harach lefanai, Hashem spread a table before us, Hashem gave us man, showing that He'd never abandon us. And another mashal is that David is saying that we're a guest at Hashem's table. And the nimshal is that we are guests in Hashem's world. And that if you're a guest at Hashem's table, then Hashem is obviously going to treat you in the best way. And Hashem, like, if you're at the table of royalty, then you get the best food and you get the best treatment. And so just like that, we're in Hashem's world and we get the best treatment and we get the royal treatment in this world from Hashem. So if you can see, just another thing to point out, that there's a lot of nigud, there's a lot of opposites in this Perek of Tehillim, that there's David talking about good times where he's lying in pastures and he's sitting at Hashem's table, and there's also talking about bad times where you're in the shadow in the valley of death and you have enemies surrounding you. Then there's simple life versus complex life. David talking about his life as a shepherd and talking about his life as a king. You have the shepherd outside versus the king inside, that Hashem is like David's shepherd looking after him on the outside, but then we also have on the inside he's the king who sets a table before David. There's also wandering versus stability. There's the fact that Hashem could make us move and the fact that Hashem keeps us in place. And it's teaching us that it doesn't matter where you are in life or where you're heading or where you're going, that Hashem is always with us. That it doesn't matter whether we're stable or whether we're moving, whether we have complex lives or we have simple lives, no matter where we're at, Hashem is with us. So if we then go on to look at Kosi Rivaya, which is the end of Pasuk Hey, Kos is, the gematria of Kos is 86. So he's based on the Shir of Rabbi Eli Mansur, and you can see he likes gematria a lot. And 86 is also the gematria of Elohim, which is Hashem's name for Din. So Hashem has two names that we refer to mostly, which is Hashem and Elohim. And Hashem refers to Chesed, which is kindness, and Elohim refers to Din. So how is a kos referring to Din? Like, you'd think a full cup, when Hashem gives you a full cup, you'd think that's referring to something really good and something really positive. But really, chesed is something that knows no boundaries. Like, it's limitless in your giving, in your wanting to give other people. And din is about boundaries. It's about pulling yourself in and having limits. Excuse me. And so an overflowing cup would be a cup of chesed, where the liquid is not limited by the boundaries of a cup, but it overflows. Whereas a kos shel rachamim is, and so that's what David's asking for, kosi revaya, that my cup overflows. He's asking that we're not given a cup of din, that we're not given a cup where we just fill it up to the top, but we actually are able to make it overflow. And again, we're going to get back to that. Maybe I'll just say now. So Rav Avigdor Miller says that you can only have a cup overflow if you fill it first. And so we have to make sure that we fill our lives with meaning so that they can become full, so that Hashem can then make it overflow. But it comes from us first, that we can't just let life ride by and wait for Hashem to fill up our cup. But if we fill up our cup, then Hashem will let it overflow. And we will get back to that at the end, connecting it to Purim. But just back to our Perek of Tehillim, so Pasuk Vav, so Ach Tov V'Chesed, that he says, I have one request, and it is to dwell in the house of Hashem. And we see this kind of becomes a theme in David HaMelech's Tehillim, that David always wants to be, yes, he's the king, and yes, he has to deal with these civil duties that he has, but he always wants to be just davening and learning Torah and sitting in the house of Hashem. And it's his dream to build the Beis HaMikdash. It's his dream to just sit in the Shekhinah all day. And we see it in the Perek of Tehillim Chaf Zayin, which we say in all of Elul and most of Tishrei, that it says, Achas sha'alti meis Hashem, asa avakesh shifti beis Hashem kol yimei chayai, that I have one request from Hashem, that I want to dwell in the house of Hashem all day, all my life. And we see it here again, that I want to follow Hashem all the days of my life, and I want to live in the house, dwell in the house of Hashem forever. And so, the word Ach Tov Chesed, I have one, like, surely goodness, it's actually a bit ambiguous, this Ach. And Radak says that David is thanking Hashem that until now it's been good. He's saying, but Ach means but please make it good for the future. That David's giving this, he's ending his Tehillim with a plea for the future. That yes, my life has been really good right now, yet until now. Yes, I see Hashem in my life and I see how good he is to me, but please continue helping me in the future. And we know David's really at the beginning of his journey, that he's not even king yet, and he's asking Hashem to help him in the future. The Malbim says that Ach means even though, that even though it's good in the palace, and even though he knows that his duties are going to change, he still would have rather to sit in the house of Hashem and sit close to Hashem. So he's kind of finishing the Perek of Tehillim with a bit of reminiscing and a bit of wanting, like reminding himself what he really wanted. And then the Das Mikra says, Ach means only, that only Tav and Chesed he should be worthy of his entire life. That he's ending this Mizmar with a tefillah, with a prayer, asking Hashem to that he should be worthy of goodness his entire life. So the Chafetz Chaim comments on this, which is going back to what we said before about Isurim and hardships, that Ach Tav and Chesed yirdafuni, that surely goodness and mercy shall follow me. Usually the word yirdafuni, radef, has a negative connotation. It means a pursuer, someone who's chasing you. And usually we have that in a negative way of someone who's trying to kill you or someone, it's not a good thing. So the Chafetz Chaim asks, why would David be using this negative word of radef about tov and chesed, about goodness and mercy that he wants? And so he says, the Chafetz Chaim, that we're always going to have Isurin. There's no way that someone goes through their life without Isurin. But what we do is we daven that our Isurin are good things. So we have too many good things and we're feeling stressed by how many opportunities are coming our way and trying to decide what we should accept and what we shouldn't and what we should do and what we shouldn't do. And let's say someone who has a lot of money and their hardship is that they have too many people knocking on their door and they never get a chance to sit down quietly. Like these should be our Isurin rather than sitting in a hospital bed and sick and ill. That he's saying there are different types of Isurin and different types of hardship. And so the type of hardships that we want to pursue us are the ones that really are Tov and Chesed, that we are in the position to give other people Tov and Chesed. And it's just that it is hard. Like it is hard when you don't get a second to yourself or when you have to make big decisions, but let those be good decisions that we have to make. And that's what David's asking
for. Can I just also say something?
Yeah.
You mentioned that the word, like, Rodef is pursuing is a negative thing. But isn't it also used to describe Aaron about his pursuit of peace?
Yes, true. Very true.
So, yeah, that just came to mind as well when you were saying that.
Very true.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So it's like an active, rather than it being a negative, it's more like it's an active, like,
something
chasing
that he
something. Yeah.
Out
yeah. So let our Isurin be something that we chased out, like something that we can choose what's hard for us rather than it being given to us in a negative way.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice. It's true. So if we look at the whole Perek of Tehillim, we can actually think of it as in three different ways. So the first way could be divided about talking about Bnei Yisrael in the desert. So Pasuk Aleph to Gimel is Bnei Yisrael in the Midbar, where we left Mitzrayim with nothing. We were in the desert for 40 years and we depended on Hashem for everything. We were useless. That Hashem gave us food. Hashem gave us water. And Hashem made our clothes grow for us. Everything that we needed, Hashem just gave to us. Then Pasuk Dalid is Kibush Eretz Yisrael, conquering Eretz Yisrael, where we feared the people in Canaan. That's where we fear the valley of death. Things are hard. We know in Pasuk Dalet, like when we conquer the land of Israel, that things are about to change. And we're not going to have Hashem just spoon feed us everything now. But after that, in Pasuk Hei and Vav, is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, when we live and we take over Eretz Yisrael, that we are now going to have to do the work. And we have to plow the land. We have to make our own food. We have to make sure we have water. But the way David describes it is that in Hei and Vav is that we were able to make it that we lived in stability and we lived in Eretz Yisrael securely in our home. And so it's the process of going from completely relying on Hashem to being able to self-sustain and do our own work to be able to live. And then you could also compare that to the stages of life, that Pasukim Aleph to Gimel are our childhood, where we're egocentric and very dependent on our parents, we can't do anything on our own. Pasuk Dalet is when you get to that age where you realize that there are other people in the world and not just you, and you have to figure out what's going on. Where am I important? Where are other people more important? And suddenly life isn't so simple. It's not just about you and your needs and what you want at that moment, but you have to let in other people into your world and understand that they're important also. And then Pasuk Hei and Vav is Being able to come home to parents because you want to, not because you need them to sustain you, but because you've built this beautiful relationship with your parents that you want to come back into their home and you want to be with them. And then the last way is that Psukim Aleph to Gimel is in third person. That everything David talks about is a psalm of Hashem, the Lord is my shepherd. It's all talking about Hashem in third person, where life is good and easy and everything is going well and we don't have problems. Then Dalet is a transition into complex life where suddenly things become harder. And then Dalet to Vav is all in second person, that you are with me, your rod, your staff. We're talking to Hashem directly. We start talking to Hashem in second person. We're crying out to Hashem in a time of need and we feel closer to Hashem. That we realize that yes, when things are good, Hashem is our God, but also when things are bad, we can turn to Hashem and we can talk to Him directly and cry out to Hashem in times of need. So if we look, the words, this is just something to finish off with, the words Ki Ata Imadi, because you are with me, are exactly in the middle of the Mizmor. And it's a key to a meaningful life, that it's a central belief in our lives to believe that Hashem is with us. And if we never forget that, and if we always believe that Hashem is with us, then we'll always be able to succeed. Ki Ata Imadi, because you are with us. And if we also look, the name of Hashem only appears at the beginning of the perek, Mizmar LeDavid Hashem, and the last three words of the perek, Hashem LeArech Yamim. That Hashem is at the beginning and the end. And if we surround Hashem, if we surround our lives with Hashem, and everything we do is surrounded by Hashem, and Hashem is like we focus on Hashem being every part of our life, then we're gonna be able to have a meaningful life and to live according to Hashem's ways, because we bring Hashem into everything we do, the beginning and the end, and in the middle we know that Hashem is with us. So that is the Perek of Tehillim. And then I thought maybe we could just do something really quick on Megillat Esther that refers to what Rabbi Victor Miller said about Kasi Rivaya, about having a full cup, that to have a full cup, first you have to fill your own cup and only then can you make it overflow. So if we look at, sorry, the title, we're only doing the Queen Esther part. So if you look at Megillat Esther, the beginning of the Megillah, Esther is extremely passive. We never hear anything. The first way that we hear about Esther is that she's beautiful and she's an orphan. Those are the two things that we learn about Esther first off, like in the first psukim that she's introduced, which doesn't really tell us anything about who she is as a person. Her looks are genetics and God and nothing to do with her. And the fact that she was an orphan is her circumstances that, again, surround her, that they're not a part, they're not who she is. But if we keep looking throughout the Perek, the first, like when we're introduced to her in Perek Beis, then we see that really Esther never has a say in anything that she does. So in Pasuk Zayin, it says, Lekacha Mordechai lo levat, that Mordechai took her as a daughter. Did she want to be taken? How did she feel at the time? We don't know. It happened to her. Then in Pasuk Yud, Lo higida Esther et ama ve'et moladata ki Mordechai tziva aleha. Esther does not reveal who she was and her nation or her birth because Mordechai commanded her not to. Again, when Esther was taken to the palace because Achashverosh, the king, was looking for a new wife and all women had to go to the palace, Mordechai told her, do not reveal who you are, and she did it. Again, did she have an opinion on the matter? We don't know. Pasuk Yud-Zayin. Vatilakach Esther el Hamelech Achashverosh. Esther's servants took her to the king's palace. Every person's time came where they had to go to the king and present themselves to the king, and it was Esther's turn. She was taken. How did she feel? Was she worried? Was she excited? Did she care? Again, it happened to her. It doesn't matter what she thought. And even if we thought, okay, these circumstances, like, you don't get a choice. If the king tells you to do something, that's what you do. So she didn't get a choice. What does that tell us about Esther? There was a time when she was given a choice, like given a time to make a choice, and she didn't. So before she went to the king, every woman stayed in the king's palace for 6 months. And obviously, what did they do? Try to make themselves as beautiful as possible because they wanted to be chosen as the queen. So, Lava el Hamelech, Lo Biksha Davar, Ki Imet Hashem Yamar Hagai Siris Hamelech. So, before she was taken to the king, she took no oil except what was given to her by Hagai. She could have taken anything in the world. She could have asked for anything in the palace, and yet she didn't ask for anything except what was given to her. So we see that Esther is extremely passive. She doesn't do anything. But then by the end of the Purim story, Esther becomes our hero. So what changed? How did Esther go from being this passive person who doesn't seem to be able to make any decisions on her own to suddenly being the hero of the Purim story that we have girls named after her, Esther, today, and we read the Purim story every single year with Esther Hamalka, Esther the Queen, and kids dress up as Queen Esther, and she's like a heroine of the Jewish story. So the turning point for Esther came when she was in the palace and Mordechai, who had heard about this decree against the Jews, that Haman wanted to kill all the Jews, he came to Esther and he said to her, Vayomer Mordechai, and Mordechai said to her, La'ashiv el Esther, Al tadami b'nafshech lehimalet beit hamelech mikol hayodim. Do not imagine to yourself that you will escape in the king's house from among all the Jews. Don't think that just because you're in the palace, you're going to be safe from this decree. If Hashem decreed that all Jews are going to die, then you're part of this decree. You're a Jew and you're one of us. Whatever happens to us is going to happen to you. And he continues on, Ki im hecharesh techarishi be'et hazot, revach v'hatzala ya'amod la'yehudim mimakom acher, va'at u'beit avicha ta'avedu, For if you remain silent at this time, relief and rescue will arise for the Jews from somewhere else. That don't think that Hashem has just one plan. Like, you're the plan now, but if you don't act, Hashem will save the Jews from somewhere else. But you and your father's household will perish. If you refuse to help Bnei Israel at their time of need, what if you're not living for your existence and Hashem, like, there's no purpose for you, so your household will perish. And he says, and who knows whether at a time like this you will attain the kingdom. Like, what if you were placed here for exactly this purpose? What if you were placed here to save Bnei Israel? And we see suddenly Esther completely changes. The rest of the Megillah, Esther is completely active. So from Perek Hey, Vatilbash Esther. Esther dresses herself. She stands up. She gets up. V'ta'amod b'chatzar beit hamelech. She stands in the king's court. It's dangerous for her to be there. If the king hasn't called her, she could be killed for going to and requesting the king's presence. Yet she goes and she walks there and she stands there herself because she wants to go and see the king. El Hamishta Asher Asiti Lo. She invites the king and Haman to a feast which I prepared for you. Again, this active Esther, she's completely changed. V'ta'an Esther V'tamar She'aleti V'kashti. Esther answers and she says that then the king asks her, what can I do for you? What request do you have for me? She answers herself and she says her next request. That we see that suddenly Esther completely changed. And she went from being this passive person who didn't know how to make, or from what we can see, didn't make any decisions for herself, to being someone who went and saved all of Bnei Israel. And so we see that to a certain extent, we are in charge of who we are and what we do, that Hashem gives us circumstances. But if we have bitachon, if we have faith in Hashem, that everything that Hashem does is for our best and we can impact our situations, and it's about how we, our emunah, and about trying to make our circumstances to our advantage, then we're able to live a life where we can be in a really hard situation but still say, Ki ata imadi, because Hashem, you're with me, and always have that faith that Hashem is with us whatever we do. Thank you.